This is quite a particular example of using special method for foraging, because normally birds don't do this.
In this episode, you'll hear about a bird that flushes for food and an unusual drinking tradition of local humans. You're listening to the Wandering Nature Podcast. Hi, I'm Karina Baskett. Wandering Nature is a program devoted to exploring ecosystems and discovering nature's wonderful and fascinating creatures. Because these are in exotic locations, it's also about the adventures of travel abroad. Welcome to the cloud forest. This type of rainforest is found at medium elevations in the tropics. Cloud forest is often cloudy, no surprise there. It's because the air in the lower rainforest is very humid and hot, and when it rises up the mountain and cools off, it condenses into clouds. It's cold and rainy here, but for a birder, the cloud forest is heaven. This ecosystem has a lot of endemic bird species, which are species that are found in only one place. We all know that the Amazon is a very diverse ecosystem, and actually, the tropical Andes Mountains have the same number of bird species as the Amazon Basin. But in the mountains, 40% of them are endemic, which is actually double the proportion of endemic birds in the Amazon. Some of the more famous flying citizens of the cloud forest include parrots, flycatchers, and toucans, which is the one in the background going meow, meow. Here you can also find the very brightly colored and noisy Andean cock of the rock. This bird is famous for its unusual mating behavior, but we'll come back to that in a later episode. Now I'd like to introduce you to a little bird that you probably haven't heard of. It's called the slate-throated whitestart, but its scientific name is even nicer, Myoboris miniatus.
It's a nice bird. I like it. It is dark on the head and on the back, on the wings also, and the breast and belly are yellow, and the tail is black and white. But it's nice, small. It belongs to the family American warblers. They occur always in the mountains, but not high mountains. So between, let's say, 1,000 and 2,000 meters, something like this. It occurs from South Mexico to Bolivia. The species contains something like 12 subspecies. Proportion of the black and white color on the tail is different in different subspecies. This is the main difference.
Rather than mangle this gentleman's name, I'll let him introduce himself.
My name is Tadeusz Stawarczyk.
Tadeusz is a scientist in Wrocław, Poland, at
University of Wrocław or University of Wrocław.
Depending on if you speak English or Polish. He comes all the way to Ecuador to study Myoboris miniatus because it has an interesting way of getting its favorite food, flushing.
So they use tail. They use black and white pattern on the tail to flush insects from the branches, from the leaves. So they spread the tail, they move the tail, and they flush insects and they catch them in flight. You know, this is quite a particular example of using special method for foraging, because normally birds don't do this. They just search for the food. And this is quite clever method of flushing insects.
It's easier for a bird to catch an insect in the open than play hide and go seek. So it uses this visual trick to scare the insects from their hiding places.
Insects have quite simple nervous system. So they react in simple way. They don't think, you know, they don't speculate about this. They just react. And this is like a 0-1. You escape or you stay. And when they see this black and white pattern moving, it seems to be something wrong with this. So it's better to escape. But in the same time, they make a fault because they show that they are in this place, and bird can catch them in flight. So this is very particular behavior, and we were studying different aspects of this behavior in different places.
The scientists are using this interesting foraging method to study adaptation. An adaptation is a trait that enhances an organism's survival. For example, a desert plant might have the adaptation of small leaves to reduce water loss. It's easy to say something is an adaptation, but sometimes it can be hard to prove it. In this case, the scientists are curious if the black and white pattern on the bird's tail is an adaptation or not. In other words, is the pattern there because it's very good at flushing insects? Or, like the shape of my nose and the width of my eyes, is it just what happens to be there, a random pattern? To try and figure this out, the scientists compared different tail patterns to see which ones were more successful at flushing insects out into the open. First, they created models of the bird tail, which is to say that they painted some feathers black and white and glued them to the end of a stick. This way, they could wave the fake tail around just like the bird does and measure the distance at which the insect flies away. It's like asking, how close can I get to that chicken before it runs away? I watched researchers performing this experiment. They would find the favorite buggy food of Myoboris miniatus just resting on a leaf. From a foot away, the fake tail would appear, spread out like a black and white fan. Slowly, the fan twitched side to side and approached the insect until it flew away.
We were using model of the tail with a different proportion of black and white.
And why do you have different patterns on the tail feathers?
Subspecies differ in amount of black and white on the tail. The subspecies from Bolivia has the biggest amount of white on the tail. And going to the north, they reduce the amount of white on the tail. So we used different proportion of the black and white on the tail, and we were checking if the behavior of insects is more or less the same or is different.
This is sort of like how people use different regional words to talk about soft drinks. People in California say soda, and in Michigan they say pop. Let's call the Costa Rican tail feathers the soda pattern, and Ecuador can be pop. They also tested other patterns, but we'll keep it simple and stick with these two. Remember, we want to know if the black and white pattern is random or adaptive. If it's random, then any old pattern will do. The Costa Rican insects will flush at the same distance if the fake tail looks like the Costa Rican bird or the Ecuadorian bird.
Soda. Pop.
So, if you're in California, will people understand you equally if you say soda or pop? Probably not.
You mean a soda?
The different words have different degrees of success. In the case of Myoboris miniatus, the different tail patterns might have different degrees of success as well. Each pattern may be an adaptation, perhaps to the unique light conditions in each forest. So out of all the patterns that a tail can have, maybe the one in Costa Rica can scare the Costa Rican insects faster than another pattern.
Soda. Pop.
Kind of like how you might be more successful ordering a soft drink in California if you use the local word.
Can I have a soda?
I guess so, sure.
In Costa Rica, we found that the longest distance of escape of insect is when we show exactly the pattern birds from Costa Rica.
Soda.
So I think it is quite evident that must be some relation between this pattern and reaction of insects. So it seems that the pattern on the tail is perfectly adapted to particular conditions in particular place. So here we are in different place, so we want to check if the insect will behave the same or maybe different.
In Ecuador, they repeated the experiment. Is the Ecuador tail adapted to flush the Ecuador insects? Or have the Costa Rican birds really nailed the best combination of black and white that will flush insects quickly everywhere?
Soda.
Or do the Ecuadorian insects respond equally well to all the different patterns?
Soda. Pop.
I wish I had the answer, but the data haven't been analyzed yet. What do you predict? I'll post the results to the website when they're ready, and you can find out if you're right. My money's on the Ecuadorian pattern being adaptive.
pop.
This bird species, Myborus miniatus, is not only interesting because of its foraging behavior, but also because there is a special bird next door.
Here in Ecuador, there is a special situation which interested us, because in the same place occur two species together. One which normally occur higher, on the higher elevation, and another one which is normally on the lower elevation, but they overlap ranges just around the station. So it was new situation when we could compare behavior of both species and try to answer the question if these species compete each other in some aspects.
So in other areas, there are usually not two species whose ranges overlap. Usually they occur in separate places.
Yes, normally in one place you can find only one species. So this is special place.
Yeah. Have you found them partitioning the habitat in some way, such as one species is only in the upper trees and one species is in the lower trees or anything like that?
Yeah, we were collecting exactly such data to learn if they have some special habitat selection. We found that both species forage on different height. Melanocephalus, the higher elevation species, normally feed up to 10 meters, more or less, quite low sometimes, in lower vegetation, in the bushes. And miniatus, the lower elevation species, is foraging in the canopy, sometimes very high, and it's quite rare to find them feeding very low. So they don't overlap in the places of foraging, but the question is if this is a result of competition.
Ecologists are always interested when two species that seem pretty similar are living in the same place. It's like a Chase Bank and a Wells Fargo opening up right across the street from each other. How can they coexist? Perhaps there's no competition at all. Some people prefer Chase and some people prefer Wells Fargo, and they get the same number of customers as they would normally, as if they were 10 blocks away from each other. This would be the equivalent of Miniatus and Melanocephalus selecting different habitats and going about their normal business without affecting each other at all. Or perhaps they are actively competing. Wells Fargo may put out signs with special deals to attract customers away from Chase, and the business at this Chase branch might suffer compared to other branches. Chase would like to have all those customers, but it's being outcompeted. In the case of the birds, even if we know they occupy different habitats, we can't yet say whether or not they are competing. Maybe both species would like to forage in the canopy, but Miniatus just isn't sharing that space with Melanocephalus. So, is this an example of different habitat selection or of competition?
I think that they just behave like in normal habitats they occupy. Okay. Because the higher elevation species is adapted to living in lower vegetation, because on the higher elevation the forest is lower. Mm-hmm. So it behaves just like should behave. And quite similarly, the lower elevation species is adapted to living in the higher vegetation. So when they meet here, they behave normally, let's say. So I think that we didn't find any evidence of real competition between them. The most important evidence for such idea is that we never recorded any aggression between the species. We many times, saw them foraging on the same tree without any aggression. They just tolerate each other. So if it would be some real competition, they should chase each other, they should, you know, show some aggressive behavior. But we never noticed such behavior. So I think that our question is simple to answer. They don't compete because they are adapted to different habitats, different places. And when they meet, they behave like normal.
That was behavioral ecologist Tadeusz Stawarczyk from Wrocław University in Poland. Thanks also to his colleagues Berta Orsowska, Jacek Nowakowski, and Berta Dulitz, and to the Janajaku Biological Station where the study was conducted. Go to wanderingnature.com to see pictures of the tail feather experiments and of the two Mayabor's species. This bird is not the only species in Ecuador that exhibits unusual feeding behavior. Ecuadorian humans have a certain consumption habit that seems odd to many foreigners.
It's a traditional custom in all of Ecuador to share the same glass. In other countries, each person drinks from their own bottle or maybe from their own can. But here, it's a custom that you drink from the same glass that I'm drinking from. It's practically something native that we have here.
If you didn't quite catch it, he said that the custom in Ecuador is that a group of friends always shares one glass when they drink beer, instead of each person drinking from their own bottle. To many of my American friends, this seems like a very strange custom, so I asked a few Ecuadorians about why the tradition is like this. The following quotes are translated.
You know, we like to share, not to be individualistic. I don't see the reason to drink alone from a bottle. If you can share with your friends, it's my way of thinking, that's all.
To share is better. Everyone serves his own friend.
It's because there's only one cup.
It's very difficult to give a glass to each person. If there are 10 people, it is really difficult to serve 10 glasses at the same time.
If there were 10 people and each person brought their own glass, it would be illogical, right? So, it's more practical for me to offer it to everyone using one glass.
But somehow, it seems logical that each person has their own drink in the U.S. Maybe it's because American beers come in small bottles, while Ecuadorian beer is almost always in a very large bottle, the more for sharing. Also, there's a variety of beer, wine, and liquor at an American bar, and each person wants their own favorite. But a typical Ecuadorian bar only serves beer, and there's usually only one brand, Pilsner.
Here, Pilsner is the most common. Everyone drinks Pilsner. Here, there's no other brand that's popular.
But probably the biggest reason that Americans find this custom strange is the possibility of disease transmission. A cold, the flu, and, believe it or not, herpes can all be transmitted by sharing a drink. And unfortunately, the alcohol content in beer is not enough to kill diseases. I asked my Ecuadorian friends if they were concerned about this.
Generally, a sickness is not transmitted by the lips.
In our community, this fear does not exist. We are in a place that's still natural. Here, contamination doesn't exist, nor big focal points of infections like in the big cities. Here, everyone watches their health very carefully. With this cold that you might have, you're not going to contaminate the rest. Obviously, you'd contaminate the person that has weakened defense, not me or my friend.
No, we're all healthy.
Yes, it's dangerous, but anyway, that's how we do it.
We realized that we would get sick, but the thing is that we don't think it through. We realize it, but we're stupid at the same time, you know?
But the tradition of sharing is common in many cultures. For example, in Argentina, the group traditionally shares a drink called mate. I think it depends on your perspective. If you're an optimist, it's a nice custom of sharing among friends. If you're a pessimist, it's a nice way to share herpes. I don't know who I am, but my mother taught me that it's bad manners to refuse hospitality. So when someone says,
"Give her a cup of beer,"
I just say thanks and hope that my immune system is strong.
I'm the day bartender at the Early Bird Saloon. And from 6 o'clock to noon, I pour breakfast for the soaks who can't hold a fork and spoon. I take ham and scrambled egg, then I draw one from the keg and mix them in the blender.
The original interviews were with
Wilmer,
Mario,
Davidito,
Ricardo,
Justin,
Cesar,
Vicente,
Guillermo Morales.
Their translated quotes were read by
Noah Kaplan,
Sebastian Divert,
Johannes Klein,
Chris Kennedy,
Robert Main.
From the flop, this is where they make a stop to begin their bender.
Thanks for listening. Visit wanderingnature.com to see slideshows with photos and audio from the Cloud Forest, read the blog, get in touch, and more. This project is made possible by a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, which provides funding to recent college graduates to pursue a year of independent, non-academic study abroad. Wandering Nature is produced by myself, with help on this episode from Yao Cheng, Janelle O'Sullivan, Pedro Fayoye, Rose Cahillan, and Chris Schneider. The theme music is by James Boudreau, and we also heard from The Moonlighters, Lanark, and Al Duval.
Regardless of your gender, the tips are always slander for the day. Bartender.